It is the Week in Review on this 8th of December. We'll be working through the developments of this week, from Senator Al Franken's resignation to the U.S. recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital, with guests from differing political perspectives. But first, it's time to check in on our year-end membership drive. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, here with my colleague Bill Martins. Our single largest source of funding is listener support, and that means that in this season of giving, your gift is so vital. Take a few minutes right now to support the programs you count on with your year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we heard from 10 new and returning members, so thank you very much for those pledges. Right now, we've got a dollar-for-dollar match up to $5,400. Now, this generous match is from 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Charles and Judy Hastert from Hobart. Hobart, I know Hobart very well. That's very cool. And Walter and Sandra Borowski, and it means that they're going to match every dollar you give.
You have family in Hobart?
I'm from Howard, which is like right across Highway 29 from Hobart.
Oh, so. Wow. It is all family.
Yeah.
Well, we digress. This is their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Double your support for the programs you love. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That Hobart Howard stuff is all in the Green Bay area, by the way, just for some reference there. Anyway, back to business. Wisconsin Public Radio has been around for a long time because we're committed to quality. And since listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget, that quality is possible thanks to you.
Your contribution makes this program possible and so many others as well. You're part of the quality you hear every day on the Ideas Network. When you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've been listening to WPR without pledging, maybe you haven't given because you didn't know that we're listener supported. Well, we are. The single largest piece of our budget comes from listeners, or maybe you wanted to listen for a while to see if you liked what you heard.
Well, you're still listening. So how about a donation? Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, or whatever amount you choose, makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here at Wisconsin Public Radio, we've been partnering with food banks throughout Wisconsin since 2010 to help those in need. President and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank, Dan Stein, shares the universal impact of hunger.
In the lines that we see veterans, we see seniors, we see people with physical ailments, we see families. There isn't one category, but the one thing they have in common is they're all struggling.
This drive, when you give $10 or $20 a month, consider asking for a food bank thank you gift. It's your chance to do two good things at once.
WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Bill Martins with Kate Archer-Kent. Listener support is the single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on, and that's why your support during this year-end membership drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
We know you value your time, and we value your time as well. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes. Tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
It's quick and easy to do, and your gift right now really helps. And don't forget, your pledge is going to be doubled until we hit that $5,400 mark, and we've got a long ways to go. So this is a great time to make your pledge and support the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It is one pledge at a time in this dollar-for-dollar match still in effect. Take advantage of it. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
That's right. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Chris from Middleton says, I enjoy listening to WPR to and from work. And we've got Kathleen from Larson who says, thank you for sparking fantastic discussions with my kids on the way to school in the morning.
Love that.
That's great stuff. Thank you very much to the both of you. Thank you to everyone who's made a pledge so far during this drive. And this will be the last chance to support the morning show during this year-end membership drive. So act now and get that pledge doubled. world, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hello, it's Friday, and that means it's time for Week in Review, where we rewind on the week's top stories and get insights from commentators taking different political perspectives on the developments. John Sharpless is a history professor at UW-Madison. John, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Tony Palmieri is a communication studies professor at UW-Oshkosh. He blogs at Tony Palmieri's Media Rants. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kate. Really glad to be here. And good morning, John, also.
Good morning.
Well, in an emotional speech on the Senate floor yesterday, Al Franken, the senator from Minnesota, said he will step down in coming weeks after eight women have come forward alleging sexual misconduct. After announcing his resignation in a speech, he acknowledged abuses of power without naming names of President Trump and Alabama senatorial candidate Roy Moore.
I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
Tony, the Democrats said they were drawing a bright line on the issue of holding Franken and other congressional members like Representative John Conyers, who announced his resignation this week, holding them accountable on sexual harassment. How do you think this will serve the party's interests on the long term?
I think it was critical that they do try and establish some kind of moral high ground on this issue, even though what Senator Franken has done is not even close to Roy Moore. No one has ever accused Franken of assaulting teenage girls and what have you. I don't think what Franken has done is even in league with President Trump. The fact is, as long as Democrats would keep making excuses to keep Franken and Conyers in office, it just becomes that much more difficult to put the weight on the Republicans to hold their officials accountable. So I'm hoping that the Republicans now step up to the plate and do with their party what the Democrats have now shown that they're willing and able to do. It was very disappointing, for example, to see the Republican Party, which a few weeks ago looked like it was withdrawing support from Roy Moore in Alabama, now has gone full force back into that race. So that is disappointing. They still have a few days, I think, to get this right. I don't expect that they will, but it was important for the Democrats to establish this line.
John, go ahead.
I am impressed that Congressman Ryan has maintained his critical position on this and yesterday repeated that he thought that Roy Moore should step out of the race. Reflecting a bit on Al Franken, it seems to me that what he wanted here was some time in front of the Ethics Committee to explain this incident or this collection of incidents. This actually lets Congress, the Senate, off the hook. They would rather force these people out and not have an ethics hearing in which the conditions in which women work in Congress would be revealed. So it's to their best interest in both parties to make sure Ethics Committee does not convene and hold hearings on this issue.
Senator Al Franken said just because he's resigning doesn't mean he will not continue to speak out and be an activist.
But Minnesotans deserve a senator who can focus with all her energy on addressing the challenges they face every day.
Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton, a Democrat, says he hasn't settled on a replacement for Franken, but Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith is frequently named as a possibility. Tony, what do we know about her?
Not much. I think we can assume that given that Mark Dayton, the governor, is a Democrat whose views are very similar to Al Franken, I don't think anyone expects that a person appointed to that position will be anywhere to the right of Al Franken. I think it will be someone that will be very in tune with his values. I think the more interesting question becomes in 2018, when they have an official election for a replacement, at least for the final 2 years, who runs for that. Some names that are coming forward include Keith Ellison, who, of course, I believe is the only Muslim member mm-hmm. of the House of Representatives. And, you know, for him to run for the United States Senate seat, I think, would have high symbolic value. And he is extremely popular among the Bernie Sanders wing of the current Democratic Party. So that would be a very, very fascinating race if, in fact, Keith Ellison does eventually run for it.
Following Franken's announcement, John, Minnesota Republicans began floating the name of former U.S. Senator Norm Coleman, who narrowly lost his seat to Franken in 2008. Do you think Franken's resignation puts his Senate seat in play for Republicans in 2018?
I certainly do. A lot of people nationally didn't realize how close that state was in the last election. Hillary Clinton barely won out in Minnesota. It surprised me. A lot of my family's in Minnesota, and it surprised them. It turns out that the conservative element in that state is much stronger than people had thought. I think that's going to be a hotly contested election, no matter what Republican steps in to make sure that that race is active and important.
And we're bringing your thoughts as well on this issue at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Dave, who joins us in Madison. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hello. I think that what is about to happen to the Republican Party, it won't happen all at once, but it will happen over a relatively brief period of time, is the same thing that happened to the Catholic Church, which is that they didn't deal with a bunch of scandals involving child molestation. And if you go to a Catholic church these days on Sunday, and you take a look around, you'll find it's populated with a bunch of elderly. Young people have stopped coming, and a similar thing is going to happen to the Republican Party.
Tony, let's have you respond first to Dave here.
Well, I mean, I think he makes a good point. I mean, I don't know if the Catholic Church analogy is an exact one, but let's assume for the sake of argument that Roy Moore does win that special election next week. There will immediately be hearings held on him. I don't see how he can be effective. Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, I think clearly would rather not have to deal with this. His election, I think, I don't see how it can represent anything good for the Republican Party. So, you know, in that sense, I agree with Dave. It's going to open up a can of worms, and I'm sure that Ryan and McConnell do not want to go down. I mean, is it that important to have tax breaks for millionaires that you have someone like this get into office? I would hope their answer to that is not.
John, go ahead.
Well, I think the notion that Roy Moore is typical of Republicans is nonsense. But I do think he's going to be a problem for Republicans in Congress. My guess is that if his background had come out during that primary, he wouldn't be the candidate right now. Conservatives in Alabama are faced with what they consider a very tough choice. They've got a problematic man running for office against a Democrat whose values are not consistent with theirs. I think the abortion issue is very, very important there in that state. So they're forced to make a decision about a candidate, which is very similar to the kind of decisions that Democrats made with Bill Clinton. You look past their improprieties, you hold your nose and you pull a lever because you can't stand the other party. What'll hurt Roy Moore, I think, and what's not shown in the polls, is if Republicans simply stay home on him. When people are filled with anxiety about their vote, they often simply forget to vote. And the next day they go, oh, it was yesterday election day? I must have missed it. His big problem, I think, is stay-at-homes.
Let's go to Todd in Green Bay with some insights. Todd, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, interesting that the accusers of Roy Moore, all of this has kind of settled down and kind of hit a wall and then it stopped, although there was a tremendous amount of media attention paid to it and there was a tremendous amount of media pressure on him to step down. Initially there was pressure from the Republicans too until they realized, you know what, you know, the voters are going to decide this no matter what. And what I think the only reason why Al Franken stepped down when he did is because of the polls. And I think the polls right now show that Roy Moore will win that seat. And if Democrats can't, if they didn't take care of this problem right now, they wouldn't be able to say, look, we take care of our problems. Why don't you take care of your problems? So Al Franken stepping down, John Conyers stepping down, all of this stuff is total strategic maneuvering. There's nothing, if the polls indicated that Roy Moore was going to lose, Al Franken would have got his wish and left this thing sitting in the Republic or in the investigative committee or the ethics committee, where it would have died, and Franken would have just carried on as if nothing ever happened.
Well, Todd, thank you so much for contributing. We're going to leave this issue simmer and go to Wisconsin, where congressional Democrats aren't the only ones who are responding to reports of sexual misconduct by members this week. Wisconsin Representative Josh Zepnick of Milwaukee was removed from House committees after reports that he kissed two women against their will, and he's facing calls to resign. Zepnick acknowledged in an interview this week that, quote, it happened and I regret it. Tony, given that he's been sidelined in the legislature, can Zepnick represent his constituents effectively now?
Well, I think that once a representative has been removed from important committee posts, it does become extremely difficult to do your job effectively. I think Representative Zepnick's problem was that he did take a little bit too long to come out and acknowledge the events. Given the environment that with the power of the Me Too movement, the major parties, I think, have to proceed the way they are proceeding. I don't think the Democrats in Wisconsin really had a choice other than to ask for Representative Zepnick to step down. Ultimately he has the choice. He can stay in his seat. He can try to face the voters in the next election. But it's difficult to go to the voters with a record of accomplishment when your seats on committees have been taken away with no guarantee that they will be returned if he were to win an election.
Representative Zepnick, should he resign?
Well, I think this kind of tests all of us. He's clearly not a Roy Moore. His excuse, and indeed it's an excuse, is that he's a recovering alcoholic and that he is embarrassed about the period of his life when alcohol dominated his behavior. I guess maybe that's something that should be tested with the voters. He's got a problem, of course, as he just won't be able to say that I'm an important figure at the Capitol anymore. He'll just be a guy who comes and goes. Maybe he can devote more of his time to his constituents. In one sense, he's not at committee meetings anymore. He will be sort of a ghost legislator. But I think at some point here, we have to decide if this is a continuum and an honest contrition, an honest I'm sorry, we will accept and the person can move on in life, or other people where obviously somebody like Weinberg, who's been a predator most
Weinstein.
Of his adult,
uh-huh.
Weinstein, I mean, uh-huh. a predator most of his adult life, we got sets higher standards for him than we do for somebody who's a suffering alcoholic.
We're exploring the week's developments on this December 8th edition of Week in We Review. John Sharpless is here, professor of history at UW-Madison. Tony Palmieri is here. He's a professor of communication studies at UW-Oshkosh. You as well on this week's news developments, 800-642-1234. What do you think of President Trump's decision to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem and to recognize the city as Israel's capital? What effect does it have on the future of peace negotiations? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back in a moment. is the December 8th edition of Week in Review, getting two different political perspectives on the week's news, and we'll be coming back to it shortly. But first, we're checking in on the year-end membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, joined with Bill Martins. We're in the home stretch on our year-end drive. Your financial support, it is the foundation for all the great discussions that you enjoy on the Ideas Network every day. So make your tax-deductible year-end gift right now for 2017 at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've got a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Charles and Judy Hassert from Hobart and Walter and Sandra Borowski. That's up to $5,400, and we're at about $1,300 right now. So a lot of room for you to get in right now and get your pledge doubled. Take advantage of this match right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you listen to the Ideas Network, you make your community a better place because you're an engaged, informed citizen. When you give to Wisconsin Public Radio, you're doubling the good you do.
That's because WPR is listener-supported, which means that your financial support is the foundation of our budget. Your support makes this incredible service available to you and the entire state. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And during this holiday season, give something extra when you support WPR. Your donation makes the programs you love possible, and you can ask for one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month.
These thank you gifts provide meals to those facing hunger in your area through regional food banks. Do two good things with your gift to WPR at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
December is a special time of year. We asked some people, what are your year-end traditions?
Our family generally gets together at my mom and dad's house, and we just spend time with each other.
Going for a walk in the first snowfall of the year.
Getting out my Hawaiian Aloha Advent calendar, which has a giant Santa Claus in an Aloha shirt and flip-flops.
Make giving to Wisconsin Public Radio one of your year-end traditions. In return, you'll get programs that make you think, laugh, and start conversations all year long. Here's how.
What else could you want? WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this year-end membership drive. Happy Friday. I'm Bill Martins with Kate Archer-Kent. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount. And because the single largest source of our funding is listeners, your gift is so important for the WPR programs you enjoy.
Perhaps you're saying to yourself, you know, I'll support the morning show tomorrow. Well, actually, today is your last chance to pledge your support for the morning show during this membership drive.
Don't delay. Join this great community of people coming together right now to make great radio. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Dollar for dollar match. It is still in effect. There is match money on the table. We have about 20. Let's see here. We have, Bill, can you do the math?
About 3,000 to 4,000. 4,000, yeah.
Yep. 4,000 and change. There is plenty of match money left here on the table. We need 27 more pledges this hour. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR will go twice as far.
That's right. And it's the season of giving. Support the radio you love and do something extra. Choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll make a difference for WPR and for those facing hunger in your area.
Sarah from Wapaka says, my job takes me all over Wisconsin and all of my radio presets are set to different WPR stations from around the state. Sarah, you got it mastered.
Yeah.
Yes, she knows the ins and the outs of how we can really get all over the state carrying Wisconsin Public Radio broadcast. Join Sarah right now with your pledge and make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thanks. We Week in Review. It's in full swing on this 8th of December. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. John Sharpless is here, a professor of history at UW-Madison. Tony Palmieri joins us as well, a professor of communication studies at UW-Oshkosh. He blogs at Tony Palmieri's Media Rants. On Wednesday, President Trump announced that his administration would recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, moving the U.S. embassy in the near future to the Holy City. The move has sparked violence in the region and an international backlash. But the president says his team seems willing to ride it out. Vice President Pence is planning a visit to the region in the coming days. John, what's the case that President Trump is making here?
Well, he's arguing that this is just a recognition of fact, that the facts are that Israel is in control of most of Jerusalem, either actually all of it in a de facto way. And this is a recognition of that fact, and that he is simply fulfilling a promise that the last four presidents have said they were going to do and did not.
Well, Tony, Pope Francis, the United Nations, the European Union, and various U.S. allies, they've all voiced criticism and anxiety about the president's decision. What do you think this does to the prospect of the peace process between Israelis and Palestinians?
Well, it certainly doesn't help it. I think American foreign policy at its best shapes and leads international consensus that's rooted in democracy and human rights. Unfortunately, since World War II, we haven't had many administrations, Republican or Democrat, that have really led in the way that I'm thinking. American foreign policy at its worst happens when a leader, in this case President Trump, plays to a base. I mean, what he did with the recognition of Jerusalem as the Israeli capital was play to a certain group of evangelical Christians and certain pro-Israeli groups in the United States, like AIPAC. You know, I think he's putting lives at risk. I think he's moving the peace process further into oblivion. And I think it's classic Donald Trump. I mean, his ignorance about global affairs is just staggering. But he does not seem to care. And, you know, once again, you hope that cooler heads in the Republican Party prevail and let him know that this is not acceptable and cannot go on this way.
We heard from John, who joined us from Eau Claire, couldn't stay with us, but said, I think President Trump's decision with Jerusalem is like throwing a grenade in the Middle East. It doesn't serve any purpose. It's destroying peace, and historically speaking, it's unprecedented. This is unproductive, and people are going to die from it. John Sharpless, what do you make of that comment?
Well, the administration is in some ways here eminently pragmatic. They view this as a de facto, this is simply a fact of life. The fact is that Israel has occupied Jerusalem. They view it as their capital. And so they would argue we are simply accepting the real world. And what's interestingly enough, he's looking at our allies and saying, you don't accept the real world. The notion that this will make negotiations more difficult, I think, is over-exaggerated. These negotiations have not been progressing since the first Bush administration. There's been a deadlock. So from the standpoint of some kind of resolution of this problem, I don't think this will make much difference. However, it clearly is going to provoke violence. There is going to be a violent reaction. And I think from America's foreign policy position, it may provoke violence in areas that we are making a strategic decision to ally ourselves with. So this could have implications in, say, Egypt, for example.
Let's turn our attention now to the ongoing investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Among the developments this week, published reports indicating that Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has subpoenaed Deutsche Bank records connected to President Trump. It's one of the handful of major banks willing to lend to Donald Trump regularly. A Trump lawyer disputed the report, however. Tony, why would Mueller be interested in his lending history?
I think Mueller has come to the conclusion that's been pretty obvious to most citizens since the campaign, that until we know the full extent of Donald Trump's finances, whether through his tax returns, which I think is the preferred option, or his dealings with banks, it's impossible to put any kind of firm interpretation on his foreign policy. I mean, we simply don't know if what Donald Trump and his administration are doing is for the sheer purpose of benefiting the Trump family. I mean, no one wants to think that that's what's going on. I don't want to think that. But until we know the extent of his financial dealings, how can we be sure? And it seems to me like the Mueller team has probably come to this conclusion that his financial dealings represent a critical piece of information that is necessary to make this investigation go forward.
John, the president said this summer that seeking his financial records would be crossing a red line. Are the president's bank records fair game in the investigation?
Well, I suspect they are, but there's a continuum here. At one end is Trump's long-time dealing in the international money market and looking for loans from various places in the world for his resort and hotel interests. That's probably problematic from the standpoint of ethics. It would be troubling to know that we have a president who's engaged in that kind of behavior, but none of it is impeachable. There is something that would be fundamentally impeachable if there was money laundering with the movement of these funds, and it was shown that Trump was directly involved in the movement of funds from, say, Russia to banks in Germany to the United States to various investment opportunities. That would be troubling. And finally, what would be disastrous for Trump is if money for his campaign was funneled through German banks. That is illegal. It is criminal, and it would be impeachable. Now, that's the most extreme discovery that could come from this. I would argue at the other extreme, his shady career in real estate development is something that people should be troubled by, but it's not impeachable.
Well, we're going to press the pause button on this Week in Review edition here on this December 8th to check in on how our year-end pledge drive is doing. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and with us is Bill Martins in the studio. This is your chance to support the programs you count on every day on the Ideas Network, programs that keep you in touch, informed, interested, enlightened. Your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. So vital as we end this year and look forward to 2018.
Well, we hope you've been enjoying the Week in Review, in which we talk about the top state and national political stories of the week. Of course, John Sharpless and Tony Palmieri have been longtime veterans on this Week in Review program, and they play nice with each other. They don't. It doesn't get violent. We haven't had to call the cops on either one of them yet, so I like that part of it. They're a great pair, and we're happy that they make some time for us to come on and share their thoughts with you. And that's, you know, I know it's one of your favorite hours of the week, and you know it's a great example of the newsy and informative, thought-provoking conversations we have on the morning show.
Now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you. Then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, we've got a dollar-for-dollar match up to $5,400 in effect right now. We're at about the $3,300 mark, so still a little bit of room left for you to get in on that. Let's not leave any money on the table. It's a great time to pledge because 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Charles and Judy Hastert from Hobart and Walter and Sandra Borowski, will double every dollar you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support WPR. So double the impact of your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552.
Perhaps you're a deadline-driven person. You're a list maker. You like to cross things off your list. Yeah, like me? Well, then our year-end membership drive is for you. You've been thinking all year that you love WPR. You listen every day. You value the programming. You really should donate.
And you can still do it. Now is your time. Stand up and be counted as a WPR supporter in 2017 when you make your gift right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At 6 o'clock, as soon as my husband gets out of bed, I turn on the radio in the room, and it's on the whole day. I decided to become a sustaining member because it's so convenient. I've been a contributor to public radio probably for close to 20 years. It's just a very convenient way for the money to come out of your checking account on a monthly basis. My name is Nancy, and I'm from Sheldon, Wisconsin, and I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
And we love having you part of the family, Nancy. Thank you very much. WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. I'm Bill Martins with Kate Archer-Kent. We are raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs you enjoy on the air. Whether your pledge is $10 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and count on your gift.
And giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is super easy. It takes just a few minutes to make your contribution, and you'll get so much in return. Consider a 9XM leadership gift of $100 a month or $1,200 a year or more.
That comes down to less than $4 a day, and it makes the talk, news, music, and entertainment that you count on from WPR possible. Your 9XM leadership gift makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible today and for future generations. So give as generously as you can. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Our dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect. Give right now. There is still about $1,800 of match money, $1,300 or so of match money there for you. If I do the math right, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR will go twice as far.
And this pledge drive, you can do two good things at once. Choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month, and you'll provide meals to those in need in your area. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Joe from La Crosse says WPR plays a unique and essential role in maintaining the quality of life in Wisconsin. Join Joe, join Nancy. There is a whole community of listeners who have become members of Wisconsin Public Radio. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks. It is the Week in Review on this 8th of December. John Sharpless is with us, a professor of history at UW-Madison, and Tony Palmieri is a professor of communication studies at UW-Oshkosh. You can join in this conversation as well on the developments of the week, 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimmel was in the news this week, has recommended disciplinary action, but no criminal charges against several former employees of the now-defunct Government Accountability Board in connection with the leak of a secret report on Governor Walker's campaign activities. That leak went to the Guardian newspaper. John, what is at stake here?
I think the Attorney General has come down here in an appropriate position. It's limited in its scope. I suspect by making it an administrative reprimand, most of these people won't suffer very badly. I know there was a lot of pressure in the Republican Party to make it criminal. I don't see the point of that. This sends a message that if you're in a position of power and you're in charge of information that shouldn't be public, you should stand by that obligation. I don't see this as a controversial decision.
Tony, what is your take on the Attorney General's decision in this case?
You know, I would encourage your listeners to go to the web and read Attorney General Schimmel's 88-page report on this. He goes out of his way to say repeatedly that the Government Accountability Board was acting in a partisan manner, and yet Attorney General Schimmel's report itself is one of the most partisan documents I've ever read. It seems like it's designed to be a justification for getting rid of the Government Accountability Board, which was recognized nationally as a model for what a state government ethics board should be like. So for Attorney General Schimmel to complain about partisanship at the GAB while he's writing a remarkably partisan document, I find a little bit troubling. He does demonstrate in that document that, yeah, there probably were some excesses in the GAB, but at least as regards the John Doe investigations, but nothing that would have justified getting rid of that board, which was doing its job, and it was doing its job so well that the majority in Madison felt they had to get rid of it, and they did, unfortunately.
Well, Republican State Senator Steve Noss is calling for the resignation of top officials at the Wisconsin Ethics and Elections Commission in connection with Schimmel's report. Those are the agencies that have replaced the GAB when it was disbanded in 2015. Noss wants the resignations of the directors and chief attorneys at each of the institutions. John, what do you make of cleaning house as a way to see through this?
Well, with all true respect to Mr. Nash, I think that's excessive. I think this report stands for what it is. People can read it any way they want. I think the results of the Attorney General's decisions are relatively modest compared to what he was. He was being pressured to initiate criminal action. He did not. He may be a bit partisan in his defense of the decision on the part of the legislature and the government to do away with the board. But setting that aside, the ultimate result of this thing is relatively modest.
Well, yesterday, the University of Wisconsin Regents approved a policy calling for tracking faculty teaching loads. Let's bring in Mark from Appleton, who wants to weigh in on this. Mark, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I was calling in more about the merger of the UW colleges and UW.
Sorry about that, Mark.
So, you know, you had a little bit at the beginning of the show in the news report from the HLC with regards to online. People were given 24 hours to come up with a proposal. I mean, this entire merger is being done by the seat of its pants without much discussion. As far as I can tell, it's being done without much discussion to avoid looking at what's going on within the UW, because the budget cuts and the tuition freeze, unpaid for, have really caused massive problems, and we're masking that by this merger without any kind of discussion. Regarding accreditation, we've been asked to come up with reports within 2 weeks of things that usually take a year to do, because the HLC wants it by next January 15th. And again, all of this is being rushed because of Ray Cross and the Board of Regents' decision.
Let's get Tony to weigh in here. Tony, merger on the fast track.
Oh, it's definitely on the fast track. I cannot speak for all faculty on my campus, but the faculty I do speak to, we're just very confused about it. We don't have enough information. Our chancellor, Andrew Levitt, has put together a leadership team that's going to try to, make a smooth transition into our merger. UW-Oshkosh will merge with UW-Fox and UW-Fond du Lac. So, you know, Mark is right. I mean, this was done very hastily without enough information given to anyone. And we just now have to hope that the final institution is something that does benefit students, mostly taxpayers, and all employees of the system.
John, when you read the tea leaves, what is it saying about this merger?
I have no hostility to the merger, but remember, I'm in a fairly safe position here because I'm at Madison. The state system's going to struggle with this. I'm a bit concerned that this is rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. There's clearly some major problems that the system is facing. On one end, a drastic budget cut over the past, actually it goes past, it's earlier than Walker. The system has been suffering through a number of administrations. There is, in some areas, for example, University of Wisconsin-Superior, declining enrollments. Clearly something has to be done. I'm just worried that they're going to change the flow diagram. For some place like University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, they'll change the flow diagram, but it won't change the way in which young people are educated.
So changing the hierarchy, changing the systems behind what is happening in the classroom,
that's right,
is not going to...
I don't know what it'll do.
Uh-huh.
I'm often... See, bureaucrats love to rearrange things. I've been involved in university life way too long. There's always a new way to do it. And when it's all done, it doesn't really change the fundamental way in which education is happening in the classrooms or the research is being done in the laboratories. So I'm concerned that there's a lot of energy that's going to go into this, and there won't be any kind of substantive real change in the nature of the University of Wisconsin system to make it better.
Well, before we wrap up here, what about tying dollars to performance? Regents approved a plan to tie $26 million in state aid to performance improvements in areas such as student access and student degree completion. Well, what do you make of that?
I just want to see how that happens. Are we going to have a set of criteria, extra brownie points? If all my students get A's, I have an incentive to give away A's. How do they know if my classrooms are really working? Is the real test going to be the students getting a job when they're done? Well, that's not really a test of a higher education institution, because our job is not to place students. We would like them to find a place in the economy. We would like to have them find jobs that are satisfying and provide an income that's necessary to proceed with their lives. But somebody in a classroom, a particular teacher or professor, can't know in any way whatsoever that what he or she is doing actually will lead to income gains on the part of the student in that class 30 years later. You can't know that.
Tony, I'll let you have the last word here. Is this a workable approach?
No one's really sure. For many, many decades, we had a proud tradition of shared governance in the UW system where we valued the opinions of students, the community, the professors, the administration. We all tried, at least rhetorically, to work together, arrive at new policy. Now everything seems to be done in a very top-down manner. Not only does that create more frustration at the grassroots level in the system, it doesn't create better policy. So until we figure out a way to get everyone on board and have everyone's views valued and invite people to participate, I think we're going to see more stress in the system.
Well, Tony Palmieri, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Tony Palmieri is a professor of communication studies at UW Oshkosh, blogs at Tony Palmieri's Media Rants. And John Sharpless, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
John Sharpless is a professor of history at UW-Madison. They're joining us for this edition of Week in Review. This hour, this Week in Review, was produced by Michelle Johnson, Bill Martins, and Nyasia Ellison. And now let's turn our attention to our membership drive, where we have a match going on, dollar for dollar. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Bill Martins. Join in and support the programs you rely on for a strong finish to 2017 with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying this conversation, the Week in Review. We've talked about Al Franken resigning, Jerusalem. We wrapped up with some talk about the UW there. Good discussion with John Sharpless and Tony Palmieri. And this hour is an example of the important, timely, and insightful conversations we have on this program.
Now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, good news regarding that dollar for dollar match. We did it. We're at $5,900 right now. We were shooting for 54 and we're at 59, and we still have some time to spare here. So that's great. Thank you very much to all of you who took advantage of that and got your pledge doubled. troubled. And let's rack up a few more pledges here while we've got the time. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And by the by, the easiest way to make sure that your support for WPR is always current is to become a sustainer. And that means your monthly gift automatically renews every year, whether it's $10 a month or $100 a month or any amount you choose. Get started right now. It'll feel great at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you are a WPR member, if you ask a WPR member why they give, they'll probably tell you it just feels better to listen to WPR when you do give. It feels good to know you're part of making something special happen.
So make your first ever gift of, say, $10 or $20 a month and enjoy the excitement of supporting your Wisconsin Public Radio. It starts with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Oh my gosh, how did I forget to mention this? Even though we reached that dollar-for-dollar match, we still need three more pledges to reach the goal. So we've got just a couple of minutes left here. We can get those. But it all, you know, we need three of you right now to take action and make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Joe from La Crosse, we heard from him saying WPR plays a unique and essential role in maintaining the quality of life here in Wisconsin. Join Joe and so many other listener members of Wisconsin Public Radio. Come on board at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And thanks.